Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. We're back, and we are talking about the inventory sale, which is in its second week.
Yep.
And still some good stuff on the table.
Yes.
And games, comics, all that kind of thing. And the discount this week is 45% plus 2d6, which means 47 to 57% off. And if you have a rogue card, you get 57% off automatically.
Yep. I've had several of our rogues taking advantage of that. Also, people seem to have had some good rolls lately. I don't know. I'm not saying that probability has altered for our event. But it felt people were doing above average.
Maybe all these people rolling have probability altering powers.
Like that's Black possible. Cat and
Gambit.
Gambit.
And Domino.
And Domino.
And Longshot.
And Longshot. That's
and,
pretty good. I wasn't sure
and
how
Scarlet Witch.
Name. Scarlet Witch. Yep. That's pretty good.
A lot of people have
they really
leave
on that one.
Yeah. Are there any DC people with that power? I feel like Roulette should, but she doesn't have that power.
No, Roulette just, you know, gathers people together and does fights for money.
Yeah, Roulette's power is amorality.
Yes.
I know this is a random anecdote to just drop in the middle of the podcast.
Yes.
I was talking about it with a customer last night, as long as we're talking about random probability powers.
Sure.
There was, I don't know if you remember this, but I believe Chris Claremont used to, in the classic X-Men stuff, I know you're reading some of that right now,
I am.
Right? So maybe you've come across this,
uh-huh.
Make out that mutants healed a little bit faster than humans. They were a little bit tougher.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, I think, just in his mind, he's like, man, if they're going to be fighting every month, I have to have some small explanation for how they're surviving.
Is that why when you look up everything on Wikipedia, every
yes, they
mutant
all
has,
say,
like, a healing
very
factor?
Very light healing factor. Yeah, like, the like, you get a cold faster.
It's a little
ridiculous, but I think it was just to accommodate the convention of lots of fighting.
That's what in the Flash TV show they gave him the super fast healing power, which makes a lot of sense because
and even somebody like Buffy was supposed to be a little bit amped up too.
Yeah. I guess they want to be like, hey kids, don't go out and get into street fights because you don't heal like mutants do.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think we've come to the heart of the matter.
Yeah, it's good advice. We should run a campaign. All right, so news. We have a bunch of trailers because there was this whole Super Bowl thing.
Right.
Put
out a trailer.
But before we get to that, a couple of big news as far as like movie and TV stuff. Denis Villeneuve, possibly, is that how you pronounce the name?
Okay.
Director of Arrival, right? And Blade Runner 2049, is that right?
Yes, that is
okay.
Correct.
He is doing Dune. He's officially throwing his hat in the ring.
This is going to be our new serious sci-fi guy, right?
Yeah.
Like serious, but not like art house serious necessarily.
Right.
You know, Arrival...
Well, Arrival was pretty serious.
And it was like... But it was like...
there were maybe a few little moments of levity.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, it wasn't like... I differentiate between a serious movie and art house serious.
Yeah.
But I guess both Blade Runner and Arrival have a touch of that, too.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that makes sense. I saw Sicario that he did and wasn't crazy about it.
I haven't seen that. What was the basic?
Sicario was drugs, Mexico, and Emily Blunt played like a DEA agent.
No robots?
No robots.
No spaceships?
No spaceships.
What about lasers?
There were no lasers.
It's pretty straight up kind of real world.
Yeah. So he's a serious guy.
Yeah, he's a serious guy. So
I think that's a good fit for Dune.
So I still haven't seen Arrival. I was not crazy about Sicario, which has dampened my enthusiasm for Arrival.
And I was not crazy about Arrival.
So I was going to ask you, Dave.
My enthusiasm for Sicario.
We just recently watched Independence Day again.
Yes.
So let me ask you this: from your Alien First Contact movies,
got it?
If you could rewatch Arrival or Independence Day. Okay. Nick?
I would choose Independence Day and its sequel.
Wow.
Over Arrival.
Damn!
Okay. Well,
I'm on this for the sequel, though.
Look, I enjoyed Arrival all right.
Yep.
I kind of don't see myself watching it again.
It's one and done for me. I don't need to.
Some people really liked it.
But Dune has always sort of been impenetrable sci-fi. Is this guy the perfect guy to do it?
Right. It's a dense story. It's kind of like, it has emotion in it, but it kind of has, like, the intellect is kind of cold throughout it.
Yeah.
There's, you know, the Bene Gesserit and their long-form planning, and everybody, you know, when I read the book, I was like, man, everybody is, like, thinking in, like, it's wheels within wheels within wheels of manipulation.
Or is he just going to make this boring?
He did it with Arrival. No, here's the thing.
I know everyone's like super excited for this director, but the more I see him, I feel like he's just overhyped.
Maybe so.
Well, I also think we're all dumb guys,
yeah.
And we all like we all grew up on like 80s movies and all that kind of thing. So, like, cerebral sci-fi is none of our bag in general. More Dave more than any of us.
Well, Blade Runner though, I've watched countless times.
But Blade Runner still has. I mean, it's really Scott. It's still got that.
Comparatively, it is cerebral, but it's also a noir sci-fi.
It's cerebral in the same way like Alien. It's moody, but it's not like. It's not like a deep thought sci-fi.
Right. It still has a dude shooting robot humans. Basically.
Exactly. Which is all I ask out of anything.
But he could be a robot himself.
I haven't watched The Expanse yet, but I gather that was a little closer to hard sci-fi.
No, that's got a little action. That's Blade Runner-ish, I would say.
Yeah. Well, Dune does have people riding giant sandworms and sword fighting with Chris knives.
Yeah.
And
do you know this from reading the book or from watching the Sting movie?
Both. But
you've read the book?
Yeah.
I've never read the book.
It was a bit of a slog for me, to be honest.
Yeah. But then again, I can't read Lord of the Rings either, so.
That is kind of a slog, but it's still worth it.
Right. It's good.
I'm just saying this guy might find the most boring way to portray people riding sandworms.
I feel like you had David Lynch do it the first time, right?
Yeah.
It sort of makes sense to get the Villeneuve, it seems like, in that mold. So.
I feel like he has good potential for it. And, you know, Nick, have you ever read Dune?
I've not, actually.
So, you know how, like, there was a certain coldness to the characters in The Arrival?
Yeah.
Like, there was a very human story at the heart of it. And I know that moved a lot of people.
Yeah.
But as they were portrayed in a moment-to-moment scene, it was not very warm.
No.
And that is what everybody is like in Dune.
Right.
Yeah.
It's very Game of Thrones, but without even sort of the camaraderie that tends to kind of bring you know, the down-to-earth guys, the mercenary dude who's Tyrion's bodyguard, you know?
Yeah.
There's nobody quite like that.
I was gonna say, I still root for people in Game of Thrones, full well knowing they're all going to die.
So, anyway, it's weird, but I do think he will probably be a good fit for it.
Yeah.
I don't know if the movie is filmable, or the book is filmable.
Yeah. Am I correct that Dune, isn't it a power-hungry, kind of ugly dude who's trying to gather up all the resources is in charge of everything?
Yes, a bloated rapist, pedophile type guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't... I don't know...
I'm not drawing any parallels.
I don't know if it'll plug into anything in our current events.
No, nope, I can't imagine anything that would tie into.
But, you know...
All right, moving from...
Save us sandworms...
Moving from that to one that I know we're all excited about, Hulu doing Marvel's Runaways.
Yeah, this is cool.
They got the casting. What's interesting is I don't know necessarily – I know one of these actors, but that's good because they're all young actors. If I know them, then they're casting too old.
Correct.
The one I know is from Casual, and I liked him in that. He was the boyfriend of one of the characters. He's playing Alex. He'll be a good cast for Alec. Looking at the descriptions, it says a couple warning bells. And I know this is probably them trying to sell it to Hollywood, but for example, the description of Gert is Ariella Bearer, New Girl, One Day at a Time, is Gert Yorks, is a purple-haired, bespectacled contemporary riot girl. Oh, it gets worse.
Right.
Never passing up a moment to stand on a soapbox, Gert sometimes wields her persona as a brash social justice warrior to mask her true feelings. That is not at all what I imagine when I think of Gert. And I'm like, I understand you want to keep surprises for the audience, right. But I would have mentioned the Velociraptor right away.
Yeah.
At least second sentence, maybe first.
Yep.
Gert is broadly brash and sassy.
Yeah.
That's what I mainly remember of her.
Yeah. There's a couple things in these descriptions that made me think they may have tweaked it to make a little bit more poppy. And I'm like, you know what? Runaways was really good character stuff. You don't need to tweak any of that stuff.
Right.
But that said, it's a good cast, and Hulu's originals have been getting better, and I'm really hoping that Runaways will be great.
Yep. Generally, I thought the cast looked pretty promising.
So let's jump from another Marvel TV show to the trailer for Iron Fist, which we just got today.
Yep.
Nick, you want to speak to the enthusiasm before Dave and I shit over everything?
I like Iron Fist. I've enjoyed the character over the years, both solo and in his exploits with Luke Cage.
Yep.
I think this looks kind of badass. I know exactly the criticisms that both of you are going to say.
Actually, you know what? You don't know the criticisms.
Okay, I know the criticisms that Randy is
even though we were talking about it. Because here's the thing. I didn't actually watch the trailer. I just saw a few bits and pieces over your shoulder. I sort of generally agree with Randy's thing, which is that these Netflix things are not quite what you're looking for. They're a little... They hide a little bit more of the superhero-iness that we would like to see peek through.
Yeah.
But, but, you know, I like, the only Marvel Netflix thing that I've watched is season one of Daredevil.
Really?
Yeah.
I've watched all of it. Here's where I am on Iron
Fist. I've seen bits and pieces about this.
Here's where I am on Iron Fist. Leaving aside the controversy about whether or not it should be white, because that's a whole other thing.
It's the curly hair is the problem, isn't it?
No, it's the where's his damn mask?
Yeah.
I want Iron Fist to be in a mask, and I want to see his chest tattoo the whole time he's fighting, and I want his Iron Fist to have fire going out of it.
A lot.
Not enough. I need a costume with it.
And here's the thing, and I have to view each of these season ones as an origin story.
You know what? But you don't need 13 episodes to show me his origin.
That's what they're doing.
But in the Netflix grand scheme of things, that's what they're doing.
I know. And I understand. And the thing is, I'm not saying they're bad. I've enjoyed all of the Netflix series. However, they are to me a kind of what Blade was, a solid adaptation of material for a different audience, for a not comic book audience. And now Blade was great at the time, but now Blade, you compare it to the Marvel Cinematic Universe and it doesn't stand up, because we've seen you can do a pretty true to the comics version and get a huge audience for it. So this, we're kind of embarrassed by the trappings of our material, bugs me.
Isn't it possible that it's just there's different ways of viewing both television and movies, though? Because in movies you have to move through stuff really quickly in order to get to, like, then the costume and all that other stuff. In television, you've got the time to
breathe. There's also more of a budget for movies to make the superhero trappings.
So I have to view it through those constraints that they can't quite do what the Marvel Cinematic Universe does.
I don't think there's really actually a big disagreement here.
No.
It's only a question of, is it what you want?
Yeah, that's the thing. I see what they're doing. And
I would all say, good craft, good acting.
I watched the trailer. The action looks solid, although I'll say this. I've seen better fight scenes. I've seen better fight scenes in, like, Into the Borderlands, Alias going back a ways. Like, if you're going to do the best martial artists, this is something Mark Bernardin from Fat Man on Batman was saying, is that if you're going to do the best martial artists in the Marvel Universe, show me something. Don't show me the same six fight moves that every TV show does.
Actually, yeah, you know, here's a good example of that. Whatever else one might say about Batman versus Superman, when Batman has his big fight scene that most people at least saw bits of on the trailer, it's like, that was like, whoa, that looked like Batman for real. That dude was doing all kinds of Batman-y stuff, and it was fairly impressive.
Yeah, I'm sure that I'm going to like this, but I mean, like, Daredevil has those great fight scenes in the hallways. I'm sure Iron Fist will have a few of them.
Yeah,
but I would have liked the sizzle trailer to have a little more sizzle. And
I can't disagree.
So I'm curious. I think it looks interesting, and I'm sure I'll watch it. I'm sure I'll enjoy it. But I would like to love one of these shows.
I like the power scale. I liked his Iron Fist. It looked cool.
I don't like his Iron Fist. It looks cheap and half-assed.
I guess in the final scene,
Randy wants it to be like a ball of fire.
I want it to look like it does in the comics.
Well, actually, in the comics, you know, that's one of those things where I could never tell quite what it was meant to be. It looked like it's glowing with energy, but it's glowing with energy as depicted in, like, kind of a two-dimensional medium.
Yeah.
The same way the Kirby crackle is, like, I don't know what that's really supposed to represent. It looks cool on the page, but I don't know what it would look like in a live action.
I want it to look like he has a fireball in his hand.
Maybe there's different levels of glowing.
I keep hoping that, but I haven't seen it yet, and I feel like I want to see it. My issue is just the trailer does not give me that. I saw several people who were like, oh, this looks great. And that was not what I got out of the trailer. What I got was, this looks like I expected to look.
Randy, you ever seen The Last Dragon?
Yes.
You know how Shonuff and Bruce Leroy...
And by the way, you know I've seen The Last Dragon.
I couldn't remember, actually. I couldn't remember.
Yes, sir, I have seen The Last Dragon.
You know how they have the glow?
Yes.
Right? When you get all amped up, you get the glow? Yep. Is that Iron Fisty enough for
that's,
you?
That's kind of what I want, yeah.
They're like, actually, like, when they were punching each other at the end, I think there were, like, sparks.
There are sparks. And yes, I am aware The Last Dragon has some cheese to it, but The Last Dragon has badass kung fu in it.
Yes, it does.
So
also, we're getting Colleen Wing. She looks pretty cool in it.
She looks all right.
And
is that who the girl is?
Yeah.
And see, that's my problem. Dave's like, who is that? Because there's no indication that's Colleen Wing.
She didn't look like a daughter of the dragon wearing a kimono and wielding a sword.
Exactly. Where's her sword and her kimono?
Wearing a sword.
Where's her kimono? Where's her sword?
She had a sword. Like, through most of every series.
I'm a little annoyed that Netflix is...
I didn't really watch the trailer. Like
I know. Dave's just winding me up because he thinks it's funny.
To answer your question, who the villain is, I would have to imagine it's Steel Serpent.
Well, it's the old lady from Daredevil. We see her in the background.
She's working
for the Steel Serpent. Steel Serpent, yeah.
Who's so. Steel Serpent?
He's like one of the bad guys from Iron Fist.
From like Immortal Iron Fist?
Yeah. Type yeah. Okay. He's been around before that, but
Immortal Iron Fist. I didn't know he'd been in Power Man and Iron Fist.
No. Word. But I, the thing, I don't know, I've lost my train of thought. I want to.
It's not the sexy.
I want to love one of these series, and so far I've liked all of them.
Yeah.
So, it's
can
just.
We at least agree that they're better than Agents of Shield. All of these are better than Agents of Shield.
100%. And I know that that's why they're nervous of doing something like Flash or Arrow or those. They want to stay away from the costumes because Agents of Shield is the example of the other end of the spectrum where everything is cheesy.
Hey, Ryan, just out of curiosity, can you kind of picture in your head, like, how, like, say, Daredevil and Punisher and that stuff would look for you? I mean, probably just much more costume.
100%. Yeah, easily. And also, I need to be a little less prestige TV. And I love prestige TV. I love deep character work and all that.
We're talking about how Supergirl and Arrow and Flash and stuff like that, there's a little bit of cheese to them that's part of the formula, honestly. It's part of a little bit of goofy enjoyment of the goofy origins. And I think Daredevil doesn't need to be goofy.
No.
But it does maybe need to, you know, embrace a little bit more of the swashbuckler side.
Yeah.
Or that's what we would like to see.
I think...
Marvel Knights version.
The thing is, right. but the Marvel Knights version had action. This is still, it's pretty light. It's heavier on the character stuff. They're wanting to do sort of the serious TV. And I understand...
Daredevil is where the action is.
Yeah.
Not so much.
There's a fair amount of action in Daredevil.
Yeah, there was. But the thing is, like, for me, what I want out of superhero TV is Flash and Supergirl. And I understand there's a huge audience out there that would look at that and think, oh, God, no. And this is, to me, Marvel Netflix is like what the DC movies are doing, but if those movies were good.
Right.
So it's like, this is the sort of gritty, grounded, realistic superheroes, but with strong superior plotting writing. And characters and writing.
Yeah.
And there's a huge audience for that. And I think all the people who are wishing the DC was better, this is kind of what they want DC to be.
Yeah.
And I'd be okay if DC was at least that, but it's still not what I want. What I want is the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Randy, the reason I'm laughing, and I completely agree with your point, but it's funny that you found a way to get in a dig at DC in the middle of the Marvel Netflix conversation.
Oh, no, we'll find time, I think.
we're coming up on something?
No, you know what? That was the only place to get a dig in DC, so I'm glad I got in there.
Well done.
Yeah.
We hit the quota.
Yeah.
Quota.
Everybody drink. No,
I do agree with that. That is sort of what they're doing. Is they're doing the good version of the kind of serious grounded superhero.
Yeah,
And you do not want a grounded superhero, and I don't really want a grounded superhero.
Yeah, and it's
Nick is down with the grounded superheroes,
and so are a lot of people. People really like these shows. I like them, but I've realized that my enthusiasm has dampened a little bit as I realize it's just never going to be what I want it to be. Marvel Cinematic has spoiled me because that's what I want.
Defenders and they're all in costume.
It's not going to happen. It's still not going to be what I want. But the nice thing is, the complaint I have is that someone has given me exactly what I want two times a year in the theater. That's a good complaint to have.
Yeah. Three times.
That is a great complaint to have, that the reason this stuff doesn't stack up for me is that my standards have become high.
It's the embarrassment of riches.
Yeah. So I can't gripe that Iron Fist isn't exactly what I want it to be. I just can gripe about how DC sucks.
All right. Let's move on. On that note.
Speaking of DC sucking, Black Lightning, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, is...
I knew there was some new announcements, but I...
So Fox did not pick it up.
Oh, really?
As a result of that, the pilot got picked up at the CW. So, and this, by the way, this is how Riverdale happened. I didn't realize that. Riverdale, I'd forgotten, was being developed at Fox. And the funny thing is, Riverdale fits the CW where it wouldn't have fit on Fox, I don't think.
Really wouldn't have.
And the same thing with Black Lightning. Black Lightning on Fox was a 13-episode failure. Black Lightning on CW can go 6 seasons. The question is, and we don't have an answer yet, will it now be part of the Berlantiverse?
I think it has to
There's
be.
There's no reason not to, right? Like, why not do it?
Well, he clearly feels that it's, I think, you know, the internal, you know, character's logic and all that stuff will work best on its own.
Is he basically like, no, I want to do something that's self-contained, I want to do something on another network, and the universe is like, no.
Yeah.
Put it all back together.
Yes, I think that's right.
Back in the same universe.
Yeah.
keep it together.
You know, the universe pushes back on those
pushes
things.
Pushes back sometimes.
The main reason I can think of to keep it separate is because you want him to be like the world's first superhero, like he's the first guy who does it.
Yeah.
But if I'm not mistaken, he's supposed to be a slightly older hero.
He's a retired hero whose daughter wants to get into the business.
Okay. That fits within the superhero world.
It really does.
Like, they should...
You know what? The thing is, either way, I'm going to be happy because Supergirl, when they brought her to the CW and they made her part of the universe and that she's got a separate world, they still she's still part of the Berlantiverse. Like every so often they'll do, especially on Flash, they
you're
can transport.
Be in the Black Lightning Fight Club.
Yeah, he's going to be in the Fight Club teaser, and they'll do some kind of crossover where he joins their world. Like Legends of Tomorrow will grab him, and so I'm fine with that as long as he's not cut off completely. And we never see him interact with the other characters. Do whatever you want. It's going to be closer to what I want than Iron Fist. I'm
I
sure.
actually really like the idea. Now, is it his daughter who's got
it
the
It is his daughter, yes.
So they'll both be key characters. Like, she's going to have as much of a role as he is.
It
in the
sounds
film.
Like, yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I do too.
Daughter. I like the dynamic
we,
of a...
We don't know which daughter.
Out of curiosity, is he usually a single parent, or is there going to be a wife?
He's usually a single parent. I believe he's a single parent in this.
Okay. One of his daughters named Thunder?
One of them was named Thunder, the other one was named Lightning.
Right.
And they both joined different teams, like the Outsiders.
Do we know if Thunder was part of the Outsiders? Two daughters, or just one?
I believe just one.
I think it's probably a good idea. But yeah, essentially a father-daughter sort of showcase thing sounds like a good idea.
I'm all for it. I'm excited, and I'm glad it's going to be the CW, because I don't really trust the networks to do stuff right anymore. Unless it happens to be a comedy like The Good Place. Which, by the way, is great, and everyone should watch it.
DC sucks.
DC sucks.
Jeez, man.
DC is okay.
All right, let's talk trailers. First of all, let's talk about Samurai Jack.
Yep.
How much Samurai Jack did you guys watch?
Bits and pieces.
Me too.
Yeah, I watched the full first season, and then after that it was kind of scattered.
And I'm not sure how much
I
watched. I
always enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. But this was a previous time, and there was never going to be a thing where like they showed the ending of him facing Aku, going, you know, getting his ending. Like, they just didn't bother.
Right.
And that kind of lost my interest.
Now, I don't know if that was originally their plan to do that and they just ran short of time, or if it was just the style of the era.
I don't either. But I don't know that the current one's going to do it, because the current one picks up 50 years later.
I thought it was 15 years
later. No, it's 50.
Holy crap.
And Samurai Jack is...
He can't age.
Yeah, he can't age, and it's going to be him going up against Aku. But the important thing about Samurai Jack has always been the cool as hell action sequences.
Right.
And the trailer definitely delivers on
that. And they sort of exotic locales.
Yeah.
But from what I understand, this is supposed to be the final season.
Is it? Okay. It's a miniseries.
I feel like it is supposed to be the ending.
I thought it was supposed to be the ending.
Okay, cool.
So I think we will finally see the confrontation.
Well, it starts up on March 11th, so that gives me 3 days to watch all the previous seasons.
Well, I feel
am I correct? Like, they were showing blood on the trailer. I don't think that used to be quite part of it.
No, it's on Adult Swim now, so they are making it a little more mature.
Yeah, they could. There was a certain violence to some of the action, but most of it was.
Yeah.
I remember one that was specifically. I was like, okay, this is an homage to kind of the larger than life action in Castle of Cagliostro. Miyazaki's first thing based on the Lupin the Third license, that's very sort of almost Jackie Chan-ish kind of larger than life stuff. But yeah, he's like all sliding down a wall after having been cut, leaving a trail of blood in this trailer.
Tartakovsky is like, there will be blood now.
So, you know, the Clone Wars cartoons that were so amazing years ago, like what, 10 years ago
or
something?
They were violent.
They were pretty violent. Like, they didn't show blood, but like General Grievous like killed the hell out of those Jedi.
Yep.
And, clone troopers died by the dozens and stuff. So, it was Star Wars violence. And I do expect that this is not going to be, like, violent.
No.
But it definitely has an edge.
Anime-style violence.
Yeah. It looks cool. The style has changed a little bit.
Yeah.
It still has that very stark, very graphic look, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of rooted in, I think, like, almost, I think, 60s action cartoon style.
I'm excited to have it back. And I was only a mild fan at best, so...
Yeah, like, for sure, I'm going to plan on tuning into the first episode, see how it's, what they're doing with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not for sure I'll watch all of it, but if they get off to a good start, I'm going to want to see how it ends.
We also got the trailer for Stranger Things 2, which I almost wasn't going to watch, because I know I'm going to watch Stranger Things 2, and the less I know, the happier I'm going to be.
And I still haven't finished Stranger Things 1.
What?
I started watching it again yesterday, and I'm, like, middle of episode 7.
Wow. I know there are some people out there like, oh, Stranger Things is overrated. Those people are wrong.
Yeah.
They're wrong.
Randy's pointing at me, y'all.
Some people look at you and say DC is awesome and Marvel sucks.
Yeah, but they're wrong.
You know, I saw, what do you call it, who makes the Our Awesome Prints?
Tim Doyle.
Tim Doyle's an opinionated guy. We know this. He knows it. I'm not saying anything that people don't know.
Last
night he was like, when are the haters going to come out on Stranger Things 2? Are they here yet? And I'm like,
no, no, that's not what he was saying. He was saying, are there still people out there being contrary on Stranger Things? What he was saying is, have you guys realized that Stranger Things is awesome yet?
Correct. And I was like, I felt like I was ostracized by the thuggish, bullying, Trump-like.
Oh. Well, I feel bad for you. I feel bad that you are wrong. I feel
well,
a little bad.
I hope you enjoy your show, which is like, hey, remember Goonies? Hey, remember Ghostbusters? Weren't those great?
I do want to...
It's more Stephen King for me. It's not Ghostbusters or Goonies.
It's got elements of that as well. I do want to say...
No, I was just more talking about the... joking about the fact that it nods to all of the stuff people liked in the
80s. Yes. I do want to say... I wish people weren't so opinionated, because that's really it can really be really off-putting when people are opinionated. So
I was amused that they when in one scene I was watching last night, they were like collecting a bunch of the stuff the kids had in their basement, and they this guy working for I guess the FBI or whatever he was, some shadowy organization, carrying out the dungeon board game.
Yep, yep, yeah. This is it's very much a love letter to the 80s. Some say it is just that, nothing more. I disagree.
Well, I've only seen one still from the trailer.
I call it a wank fest to the 80s.
I've only seen one still for the trailer of season two, and it had all the kids in like Ghostbuster gear.
Because it takes place on Halloween. It starts on Halloween. So they are dressed as Ghostbusters, and I'm like, that's pretty good.
That makes sense.
Also, it looks to me like it's going to be the Upside Down comes to our world, which makes sense and is a good... If you're going to do a sequel, the classic, you know, whether it's Aliens or other 80s sequels, you always wanted to escalate.
Yeah.
So you wanted to have a sort of flip of what happened the first season.
I assume it's still the... is it the Duffer Brothers? Or?
Yeah, they're still doing it. It's a good it's a good teaser, and I'm excited.
The Chemical Brothers.
Yeah.
I
should give it to the Marx Brothers.
I was telling Randy that I watched the trailer just to see what all the yahoos were talking about.
Uh-huh.
And it reminded me of exactly the things I liked and disliked about season one, which is to say I liked the music, I liked some of the tone, and it did have a kind of a cool, that sort of eerie vibe that Spielberg movies sometimes do during like the kind of eerier parts of like E.T. and stuff like that, and some Stephen King stuff too, of course, a little bit of Stand By Me. But yeah, the sort of the fan service, I guess you might say, of 80s-ishness to it bugged me. And then also I do feel like mostly it reminds me of movies that I like better than that. Most scenes in there I'm like, oh yeah, that's kind of a fun scene. I liked it better when I first saw it in E.T. or whatever. Huh.
I legitimately loved all the characters. I thought the kid actors in particular were pretty amazing. And I really, really like the first. It's one of my favorite things on Netflix, so I am super psyched for Stranger Things 2.
It mainly reminded me that I was like, oh, I might need to pick up the soundtrack to Stranger Things. I like that.
Which is really
I like
good.
That eerie synth that's kind of...
I believe
John
it's an
Carpenter.
Austin-based band. Is
oh,
it
really?
I could
I can
be wrong.
Easily see that being put on during an RPG.
Seems possible. Yeah. Seems possible.
All right, finally, let's talk about the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer.
Uh-huh.
I'm a little worried about Guardians of the Galaxy 2, guys.
Really?
It looks really fun, but I guess it's good because I don't know what the story is going to be.
Yeah,
but
I was going to say.
Like, I know Thanos isn't in it, and I'm like, what is this? What is the story? Is it? I'm worried that they're going to double down on the stuff everybody liked.
It's going to be a party.
I'm worried it's just going to be
just a party.
Yes, just a goofy party. And I want a sense of story, but at the same time, I don't want a sense of story because I want to go in knowing little. So they may be doing exactly what I want, and I'm going to gripe about it. Anyway, it's a solid
At
trailer.
Some point in the future Randy will be complaining about Marvel movies.
No, it's never going to happen.
Know that it will happen.
I remember, the funny thing is, I remember when Guardians of the Galaxy, the first trailer came out, I was like, wow, that's crazy. It's either going to be really good or terrible. So something about James Gunn's trailers set this off in me, that looks great, but I'm really nervous.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, because he certainly has earned my trust at this point.
Yeah, I haven't, I liked Guardians of the Galaxy, quite a bit. I only saw it one time, I think. That's par for me for the Marvel movies.
Yep.
And, these trailers haven't actually done a lot for me. The Baby Groot stuff, I thought,
it's fun. Almost, I like the Baby Groot stuff.
It's fun, but maybe almost, like, too easy or something. Like,
yeah.
I miss the sly humor of that first Guardians trailer, The finger given.
Yeah.
Slightly edgier, maybe.
Yeah.
I feel like he does do something in one of these trailers that's kind of
the well, of that. Rocket says the, he says, welcome to the frickin' Guardians of the Galaxy, and he didn't say frickin'.
Yeah. That's right.
It's funny, and it's right in the same lane, but I think, I need to know that it's going to be a good story.
You didn't like Mantis getting hit by whatever it was?
No, that was weird.
what happened?
She got hit by, it's like a meteor?
Something smashes into her from off screen.
And Drax is like, I've warned her. Yeah. I tried my best, guys.
Yeah, it's... Right.
Drax
it's,
is definitely in full-on comedic...
Yeah, it's... I'm worried it's going to be too goofy. I'm worried that they got... They're like, oh, people loved how funny it was. And I'm like, I did... But I also like the rest of the movie. Well, I don't need it to be
right,
just
you gotta have some heart.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. James Gunn has a vision. And I don't think he's going to listen to the, okay, we have to focus on the funny. I think he's got a story he wants to tell with them, or he wouldn't have come back.
That's my hope, is that the trailers are basically just giving us like little bits and pieces so that he can keep the story completely hidden, because that was the case with the first movie. Like, honestly, we didn't know Thanos was in it, I don't think.
Honestly, I think he's giving fans what he knows they want.
Yeah,
and that's sort of get them in the seats.
I just hope that's the trailers and not the movie.
Is doing yeah. that? But do you think the movie's going to do that?
Movie's going to have a story. I think it's going to be about Peter Quill's heritage. And
sorry, I thought you were going to say Peter Quill's hair.
I mean, sure, you could be. I'm sure
it's nice.
People do a story
nice.
About that. In
I'll just
Star-Lord.
I'll say this: Guardians of the Galaxy was the biggest challenge that Marvel had taken on. It was these characters nobody knew, completely different tone, and they hit a home run with it. And if anything, I think the expectations are even higher now, because now we've seen a great movie. So doing a follow-up to it and doing it well is even harder.
Yeah.
But Marvel Cinematic has a pretty good track record with sequels. Like, from Cap, you go to Winter Soldier. From Avengers, you go to, okay, a lot of people don't like Avengers 2. From Iron Man, you go, okay, Iron Man 2. Okay, I'm maybe a little more worried.
All right, Cap, though.
Avengers 2, I love.
I like Avengers 2, but Avengers is a better movie.
Cap did Winter Soldier and then Civil War, right?
Yeah.
That is a damn good progression.
Yes, that's a great progression.
Like, I might say I like Winter Soldier a little bit more than Civil War, but it is not a letdown.
But the other ones are Thor to Thor 2 and Iron Man to Iron Man 2 and 3.
I feel like Thor to Thor 2 was about the same.
Yeah.
The plot was sloppier, I think.
When I've gone to rewatch, Thor 2 does not hold up for me the way that Thor does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you know, I've only seen it once.
I know.
So I don't.
Is there any Marvel movie you've seen more than once?
The early ones, when they were first hitting, I saw Iron Man several times, and I've seen Hulk several times, and I've seen them when they were like at the other companies, like the Spider-Man stuff from Raimi.
Yeah.
But since they kind of began the Marvel movies proper, I don't think there really is.
Did I spend this whole news segment hating on everything except Stranger Things 2?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
But you were hating on me in there, Randy.
Yep. Oh, so everything. Okay,
yes.
Good. Well, at least I'm consistent.
So, but Nick, did you enjoy the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer?
Yeah.
Did you, what are your thoughts? I mean, do you feel like it's generally gonna...
I feel like it's gonna do well. I mean, I like not knowing what the story is. I don't need to know. I have enough confidence in James Gunn.
But you do
Gunn.
Think there's gonna be a pretty good...
I think
at least
so.
Solid Marvel story in there?
Yes.
Yeah, I the weird thing, like I say, it's a weird thing to gripe about, because it's exactly what I want. I don't want to know the story going in, but at the same time, it makes me nervous.
You wanted a few little indicators.
Yeah.
But we know it's going to have, you know, a certain planet in there.
Yeah, no, I know
that's
that.
It's not even referenced in that.
And I'm glad it's not in the trailers, and at the same time, I wish it was in the trailers. I understand this is crazy.
That shouldn't be in the trailer.
No, it shouldn't, but I want
to
see
There's
it.
There's so many avenues that they've even alluded to in the first one that they picked up, like the Celestials, you know, go back to nowhere, deal with more of that.
I am pretty sure I'm going to wind up loving Guardians 2. I'm just a little, my faith is a little shaken in things in general right now.
It's quirky because that's James Gunn. James Gunn is quirky.
Yeah, that's true.
And most of his movies are a little off-kilter.
He's a quirketeer.
Just go watch what was the one about the slugs.
Slither,
yes.
Yeah, I didn't like Slither.
I
like
Slither.
I tried it the other day, or a few weeks ago, and it was, that one was a bit of a, that was a slog.
Well, that was
for
his,
me.
Like, trauma, kind of.
Right, and it's a brand of horror I don't have an appreciation for.
You can play a character for me, though, so.
He was good in it. There were good bits in it.
All right, we'll be back in just a second to talk comics for the week. All right, we are talking comics the week of Wednesday, February 8th, and weirdly, even though I spent the entire first segment hating on everything,
yes,
I believe I'm the most enthusiastic about this week of comics, so now, I'm going to start.
Now begins the loving.
Yes, now begins the loving. And my pick is Kingpin number one. This is a new, I believe, ongoing series. By, ongoing? It is, I think, an ongoing.
Interesting.
The Bullseye is specifically a limited series. And Elektra, I think, is an ongoing, and Kingpin's an ongoing. I'm not sure about that, but I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Anyway, it's written by Matthew Rosenberg, who wrote the Kingpin Civil War, which I liked but didn't love.
What was that one about?
He had a guy who could sort of block or he could see the future as well, or something like that. So this is not tied into that at all. This is actually a pretty straightforward story. It's got art by Ben Torres, which is gorgeous. It has a little bit of that Eduardo Risso Shadows and Light, a little bit of Frank Miller. Dave, you mentioned another guy.
Peter Snijberg,
yeah.
However you say his awesome Norwegian name.
This very sort of stylized, inky work that I really like.
Stylized, but like there's some serious sort of drafting skills.
Oh, yeah. The storytelling's great. Anyway, the story is about this woman who is a reporter who used to work on sort of world politics. She's fallen on hard times a little bit. She is now she's divorced. She can't see her kids. And she's doing boxing pieces, and as a result of her boxing pieces, she gets noticed by the Kingpin, who wants someone to write his biography. And she's resisting. She's like, no, you're a murderer. But he at least gets her to go out for like one party, and she's sort of mixing in high society and seeing the sort of facade of Kingpin. And he is basically telling her that he wants to his legacy to be different. He wants to change who he is, and he wants the story of who he was out there.
This is a very interesting premise.
It's a really good. I did not think I had any interest in Kingpin series, to be honest, but this is a great first issue. The thing you got to do, which we've seen with Thanos, we've seen with Darth Vader, if you're going to do a story about a bad guy, give them something that works against them being bad,
right.
And you got to give us a point of view character. Their point of view character here is really interesting. She's sort of flawed, but ultimately a good person. Kingpin is definitely not sold out or made any less ruthless or tough, but they're sort of giving an edge of maybe he is trying to reform a little bit. And it's got spectacular artwork. So I would highly recommend this one this week.
Quick question, just Kingpin continuity stuff. I can't remember what the state is. His wife or ex-wife, Vanessa, who in the comics traditionally was very devoted to.
Yeah.
Is she alive?
I think they're split up and she's in Europe or something.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yep. And he is no longer the head of organized crime in New York. He's sort of down but not out, kind of.
Okay. Struggling Kingpin.
Yeah. I mean, although he still has all these connections. He has the governor at his party and that kind of thing.
Had to take a part-time job at McDonald's.
Yes. Yes, he did. Dave, what do you got?
I ate your Big Mac. comics. So, my first pick is Justice League, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, number 2.
Yep. We all love this book.
Easily could have been my pick.
Here's the series that who knew we were going to like as well. We had some hope because of Tom Taylor.
Yep.
Tom Taylor Tuesdays.
Yep.
They're back.
They kind of are this week.
But this just was a blast. This is a very quick-paced book. Part of what I mean is he lets the artwork breathe.
Yep.
The action scenes are big and kind of almost classic Kirby-esque kind of big action.
Yep.
But this is the issue where, last issue was the two teams meet with some dimension hopping stuff. Mm-hmm. Some bad guys get over from the Power Rangers universe into the DC universe. And they have the traditional superhero dust-up.
Yep.
Here things kind of get a little bit more settled and they start to figure out what's going on.
Yep.
But really, what makes the book is the interaction between everybody.
Yes.
There are any number of times I laughed out loud. There are cool scenes in here.
Mm-hmm.
The scene where Wonder Woman shows up and kind of like you realize what just happened.
Yeah.
I was like, that was a great Wonder Woman scene.
It's a great scene.
There's some great Superman stuff in there.
Superman is awesome in this. I'm gonna reveal one funny thing that one of the Power Rangers says very early on. They're trying to. Batman's like, well, why did you attack us? And they're like, you look like a villain. Like, in our world, you would be a villain. And we still think you're acting like a villain. They just can't get it out of their head. Like, so wait, he's a hero?
Yeah, and definitely? Flash is like, if we didn't know him, you'd probably attack him.
Yeah. Tom Taylor does a sort of, even though this is big, large, and live action, he sort of has a more thoughtful style of writing. He seems like he really is thinking about these characters. One small thing I liked that happens early on is kind of a, maybe a little bit of a prelude to the teams kind of getting a, you know, holding back a little bit and not just beating each other to a pulp in another civil war, is Flash, you know, very much kind of a guy who you think of as being sort of hot-headed and impetuous. He actually is holding back, kind of watching them and, you know, kind of scouting it out and assessing them.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was kind of an interesting move to do, that, you know, Flash does not have to just run into everything guns blazing.
Yep.
It's just sort of indicative of the little bit of extra thought that went in here. But there's also Zords and fighting.
Yep.
And another bad guy shows up from the DC Universe.
Yep. And it's a great, what a great tie-in, the two of them.
I want to propose something to DC. Make this your next animated series.
Yeah.
Make this your next animated movie.
That'd be great. Right.
I don't know how the rights would work out for
me
that,
neither.
But if they could make it happen, I think it'd be awesome.
Yeah.
You get to do some big, larger-than-life action with all the Zord stuff and the giant monsters. And
they would
have,
make so much money off of it.
And, yeah, there's all this fun character interaction. So, anyway, it's a this book is, like, just the funnest. It's the fun comic of the winter.
Yeah, it's a blast.
And I recommend it to children of all ages. Even people like me who are thinking, like, Power Rangers? Really? When
yep.
I first saw it.
Never read the Power Rangers, have no interest in them, but this is super fun.
Yep. Nick, what you got?
I have Detective Comics 950, which is both an oversized anniversary special and a prologue to the next big story arc called League of Shadows.
Huh?
What this is basically three different stories rolled up into one giant issue, each one focusing on a different character.
It is broken up into different...
Yeah, it is. The first one focuses on Cassandra Cain and sort of her life, how she views the world and sort of interactions with people.
I thought it was cool how they show her... She still has limited communication,
yeah,
but she reads people's movements, and she can read them with nuance. Like, she can tell from the way, the set of your jaw, the move of a shoulder, and
right.
stuff like that. As if she can, like, as if you'd spoken to her.
And she also views she views everyone's weak spot. She's constantly thinking, and she's a weapon. That's what she was built to be, and...
Would you, in a fight with Karnak? Karnak is
probably the
portrayed
little bit
as higher
more,
level.
Yeah, but Cassandra Cain's no... You don't want to fight her.
Am I correct,
Nick,
that she has made out... She's, like, killed before in this, right?
She
killed
her
League of
Assassins.
She
was an assassin, yeah.
Right.
She's outright, yes.
But no, she's nice.
But James... Well, it's because she came up against Batman, and Batman saw something more in her than just a weapon and sort of befriended her.
And he turned off her kill switch.
Yes.
Right. It's right over here behind
Boop.
Your shoulder blade.
Then the second story deals with Jean-Paul Valley, and I'm blanking on... Is it Lucius Fox's son?
Yeah, it's
son?
Lucius Fox's son.
Who's the current Batwing. And their story of sort of... What makes Jean-Paul Valley, Azrael, this sort of pinnacle assassin for the Order of Saint-Dumas,
yep.
is interesting, especially in this new Rebirth version.
You know what? I've always had a fondness for Azrael, partly because that Quesada costume was badass, but...
I actually
well,
think
it's a cool... It is a great concept.
Yeah.
The same
yeah.
way that Bane, once I got past the, like, is that just some kind of giant luchador
yeah.
Thing? I was like, Bane is a great concept.
Pause. Are you saying that a giant luchador is not a great concept?
No, in fact, by the way, before I knew, had read the comics from the, like, from the 90s.
Yes.
And they did that pared-down episode for Batman the Animated
yep.
Series, and he was a giant luchador.
Yep.
That was, I was like, this is how it should be done. He's fun here. It's not this tedious 80-issue-long crossover.
Yep.
And I was like, I love that.
All right. So just to make sure, we're all on board with giant luchadors.
I am
yes.
on board with giant luchadors.
All right, resume.
But then I, like, I did read some of the origin stuff that was written of Bane. I'm still not hugely on board Nightfall as a mega crossover, but the early origin stuff of Bane that Chuck Dixon wrote was fantastic.
Yeah.
Great concept. And
Nightfall,
I
think Nightfall holds up better than Death Superman, to be honest.
I can see that. I'm not a big fan of either of them, but they both have stuff in
them
that I've seen that I like.
Yeah.
And both of them, I think, in some ways, do get still stay true to the hearts of the characters, despite
yeah.
the big changes they were bringing
yeah.
in. Sorry to sidetrack, Nick.
No,
but I
no.
think we all agree, Azrael is a cool concept.
Azrael's kind of cool, and I kind of like him being in this book.
And also, I like the way that this section of the story is portrayed, because it's basically a man of faith talking with a man of science.
Yeah.
Because Lucius Fox's son is very much science-based, you know, believes in tech abilities and all that. And,
Order of Saint-Dumas, more like Order of Saint-Dumbass.
And Azrael is about faith, about giving himself to a higher power.
He's a crusading zealot.
Yeah, but they're not without finding that common ground.
Right.
And it's interesting.
That's not what we do now.
You know, but here, in this fantasy universe, Andy, okay, that can happen.
I
see.
Okay. But I feel like James Tynion really gets that across in an interesting way.
That's some nice art.
Yeah, and the art in this section done by Alvaro Martinez.
It's nice looking. Reminds me of Kits
really
and stuff.
Nice.
This is a kind of silly question, but in that very nice rendition of Jean-Paul Valley outside the costume, I see he has glasses, which I remember from his original incarnation. Yep. Does he just presumably have some kind of lenses or something in the costume that correct for him? Or does he have to wear glasses under the mask helmet thing?
Well, there's actually a...
I'm thinking like Batman with his normal costume, both glasses
on.
Okay,
yeah.
In Rebirth, there actually is a reason. There is something that they explain of why that is.
Really?
The bat-based creatures have slightly superior healing and vision in the DC universe.
There's something with the suit.
Okay.
And it was a cool thing, but I don't want to spoil. And then the third one is actually drawn by Eddie Barrows, and is sort of a untold story between him and Tim Drake.
Between Eddie Barrows and Tim Drake?
No, Batman and Tim Drake.
Yes, okay. Eddie Barrows is an autobiographical of his conversations with Tim Drake.
And this is actually showing Tim Drake's more detective side, because... He figures out what...
He's a good detective.
Yes.
He figures out what Bruce is doing by gathering all of these different things, like Batwoman trying to build team, having Jason Todd undercover, Dick Grayson working in the midst of Corvall, or it's not Corvall's, it's something else. Parliament of Owls.
Okay.
And Spiral. And he recognizes that Batman is starting something.
Interesting.
And
is Tim Drake... currently dead?
No, he's being held by what's his name?
Oz. Oh, right. It seemed
he's off the table since everyone thinks he's dead.
Right.
So I really thought this was a superb issue.
Well, it sounds like it delivers a lot of punch for.
Yeah,
for
I thought it was great. So yes, definitely worth checking out.
And your backup pick?
My backup pick. I think I've picked every issue.
You might have.
And this is Inhumans versus X-Men. I think it's just sort of my X-Men love coming out a little bit, and. I've enjoyed seeing
you. Of the three of us, you've been the one who's been like keeping up with the Inhuman stuff, so you get to get your X-Men love, and you get to see him fight off against the Inhumans, who you've been following for the last few years.
Yeah, and this one prominently features Mosaic, which is not a character I'm super...
That's one of the ones they gave a good push to, but none of us fell in love with it.
Basically, he's like a body-hopping Inhuman. He
can
take over the body of this... And he tries to take over Magneto's body, and that doesn't work out so well.
Yeah. Is this the end?
He became a body rocking Inhuman.
Yeah.
but no, this is... There's some notable things in here. And you see Colossus face off against a bunch of Inhumans, which is kind of cool.
So, who's going to win? The Inhumans or the X-Men? One of them has to win at the end, right?
Well, the thing that I mentioned a couple weeks ago about sort of... this is very much, if the X-Men lose, they die.
Yeah.
Because they can't stay on Earth.
So are they going to kill all the X-Men?
And what happens if the Inhumans lose?
They basically lose their way of life. They will eventually die, because the Terrigen Mist is sort of their... That's how they gain more.
You know, it's interesting that...
I don't want to spoil anything, but I bet they're going to find some kind of compromise so that both the Inhumans and the X-Men can survive.
I would imagine.
Well, here's the thing. Part of this is one where, weirdly, you know, it's kind of a known thing that, at least to some degree, Marvel was subbing in Inhuman focus in recent years over X-Men focus because they didn't have the X-Men movie rights.
Right.
And still don't. And so that they're not, like, as interested in pushing them quite as much. But they have pulled back on that, and the X-Men are getting some pretty heavy focus now, especially in the next few months. But the new direction coming up does probably speak to however this will end. And I half wonder if there might be a somewhat decisive victory against the Inhumans.
Maybe.
That will break up their way of life, scatter them a little bit. You'll get some dramatic storytelling because suddenly they're a little bit closer to the place the mutants have been.
Right.
But they'll also be slightly pushed off the table to make room for more X-Men.
No one pushes Miss Marvel off the table.
She's not going to have to be pushed off the table. Every single other Inhuman, though, yes.
but yeah, Dave, what do you got?
My backup pick is a graphic novel, a Warhammer graphic novel called Warhammer 40,000 Blood and Thunder. This is, in fact, a reprint of something from, I'm going to say, like 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, it was at least that.
Who was it who had it?
Boom Studios.
Boom Studios at the time. produced about, I'm going to say, like 4 to 6 Warhammer 40K miniseries.
Yep.
And maybe 3 or 4, I think, Warhammer Fantasy ones.
Yep.
And this week they put out the license, I guess, or the material has now slipped over to Games Workshop's own Black Library, the people who put out their books, and they are now recollecting them. Which I'm very happy about because I liked them all at the time.
Yeah, me too.
Every once in a while I'd be like, that's some dodgy British art.
Sure.
But, but I still had a good time with it. And this one was a fun one. It was actually one of the last ones that came out in the original one. So Blood and Thunder focuses in this dark future of Warhammer on the orcs. Which is to say, this is crazy town
stuff. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The orcs have their crazy, ridiculous Cockney accents, their love of violence, their love of accidentally, of like, being so reckless they get themselves killed all the time.
And if they need to go faster, they paint things red.
Yes, that's right. Red makes vehicles go faster.
Because they have low-level psychic abilities, so if they believe it goes faster, it goes faster.
It goes faster. One of them in this place says, floor it, you puss bag. anyway, but there is, beyond the kind of anarchy, which is the fun stuff with the orcs, there's as I recall, I haven't read this in some years, but there's two subplots. One is a sort of orc, their succession of leadership fights. Because, you know, for the orcs, it's kind of like, if you can kill the boss, you're the boss.
Yep.
And there's an interesting sort of leadership fight going on. And there's also a guy who has been captured. He's like a prisoner of war. I think he might be from the Imperial Guard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to kind of figure his way out amongst these, like, stupidest of stupid guys, but incredibly dangerous dudes. As I recall, there's some, like, dark humor to be had in it.
Yep.
As well as some badass action. Essentially, what I'm going to do is recommend this whole line.
Yeah.
That'll be coming out. There's I forget what the fantasy one that came out this week. Oh,
Forge of War.
I got it back here. Yeah, I don't remember what the
same creative team, by the way, that does Blood and Thunder.
Right, and the writer is Dan Abnett, who's written many of the Warhammer novels, so a lot of people, anybody who's read Warhammer fiction will recognize his name.
And Ian Edgerton, who is another writer of Warhammer 40K and comics.
Yep. And so this is going to be, their dark fantasy setting. And it looks like they may be doing, like, each time there's a release, they'll do one 40K, one, and one fantasy, Warhammer Fantasy.
Yeah.
I recommend all of them. A few of them are a little bit lesser than the others, but all deliver on the, creatively on the dark fantasy world that Games Workshop is so good at. So I was very happy to see this back in print. I did not think it was ever going to happen.
Yeah, I still own all of my Boom versions of them, because I really liked these series.
They put out those little digest-type versions before.
By the way, 2008.
2008.
Yep, so 9 years.
9 years ago.
Yep.
Nearly a decade ago.
Yep.
On a night just like tonight.
Orcs came.
All right, Randy, what you got for your final
pick? All right, my final pick. You guys know how I hate DC, right? I hate them. Just hate DC. My pick is a DC book.
Each one of us picked at least one DC book, right?
We did. Yeah. And in fact, I would have double picked your Power Rangers one. And I would have double picked Detective Comics if they hadn't gotten rid of Tim Drake and pissed me off. Because it's still a good book. I just wanted Tim Drake in it.
Jeez, Randy's such a DC whore.
Yeah, I am.
So what did you pick this week?
This is Justice League of America Rebirth number 1. And here's the thing. This is by Steve Orlando, who I'm not a giant fan of. Artist by Ivan Reis, who I think is a great artist, but is not my favorite artist. And I will be shocked if I'm still reading this book at issue 2. Because I don't think overall it's what I want. But what this is a really good putting together the team issue, and I appreciate a good putting together the team issue. And this is Batman with the newly reformed Killer Frost, who's given a little more depth because of her portrayal on the Flash show. And he goes around recruiting the Justice League of America team, which includes Black Canary, Lobo, who is at his Lobo-est and is definitely playing sort of the Wolverine of the group.
Right.
And I like that role more than I thought I would. I thought Lobo would be a weird fit here.
Well, so I haven't read it yet. How do they have him reined in at all? How is he just not beating people up
taking bounties? Batman a favor.
He owes Batman. Yeah, it's his code of honor.
He has a code of honor. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting.
They go to the Atom. So all those one shots they just did, Vixen, Ray, all those.
Yeah.
We're introducing people who are going to be in this Justice League. They're based out of Happy Harbor, which used to be
home of the Justice League.
And it is also where Young Justice operated. Mm-hmm. And they're definitely drawing a bit from the Young Justice version of it. It's a really good gathering the team issue, a little bit of characterization for each one. And while I'm not sure it's going to keep me long term, I'm definitely going to keep giving it a shot because it's a good first issue. So worth a read.
I the ones that I read of the various one shots, the other ones from what's the writer's name?
Steve Orlando.
Were all pretty solid, and I was intrigued to see them giving some depth to Killer Frost. And, you know, her trying to reform. And she's a person whose power, literally, she needs to, like, leech heat from some people to survive.
Yeah.
So she's kind of like a thermal vampire, I guess. And but not like, I love killing people.
That used to be her characterization,
but she kind of, I think, got used to it or whatever.
She was a psychopath.
Was she?
When you first introduced her, she was a psychopath, yes.
Like, when you say introduced, do you mean, like, the 80s?
In the Firestorm books when she was introduced, yeah.
Was she? I had an issue or two with her in it, but the main thing I remembered about that is just that she had a crush on Firestorm.
Oh. I thought that she was, like, a cold-blooded killer. Literally a cold-blooded killer.
I think I thought that she was more of one of these almost, like, Catwoman-type femme fatales that probably smashed stuff, injured people, didn't kill them.
No, I thought she was more like stalkerish. She was.
I'll have to look into it because the stalkerish part rings true. I just didn't know if she was a killer, but they. I do kind of. I'm fascinated by the redemption streak that they've offered her.
The other thing I think is interesting about this is how much it draws on the CW shows.
Because
You've got Ray Palmer. It's not Ray Palmer, but it is a battle armored looking Adam like the CW show. They've got Vixen, who is on Legends of Tomorrow. They got Killer Frost. They got Black Canary. Now I just want them to bring Lobo and the Ray into the CW universe.
I can easily see them doing it, right?
Yeah, me too.
Lobo's a little harder.
Lobo in Supergirl would be amazing. A thing of beauty.
Well, they teased it.
However, my favorite scene in this entire book was the Black Canary and Lobo.
Yeah, that was fun.
Just seeing them sort of verbally spar was interesting.
So, other stuff on my list, there's a new company called Vault Comics, which seems to be doing really nice art. I'm not quite sure what their overall goals are going to be, but this is a book called Fissure that is about some kind of an earthquake causing a fissure in a small Texas border town. It's really beautiful. It's got some interesting character work. I don't know what it's about yet, but I'm really curious. If you're the type of person who likes to look for like new Image books, you might want to give that one a look.
That's a lot of people these days.
Divinity 3, Shadow Man, and the Battle of New Stalingrad is another one of these Stalinverse books, which I've been really enjoying, this sort of alternate universe of
That was a long title.
It is a long title. It is the Russian alternate takeover of our universe, which is in no way disturbing.
Well, actually, this is the cool fictional one where you're like, oh, that's kind of an awesome spin on it.
Yeah.
Real world is less fun.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely not fun. Bad things happen to a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's dark. It's Days of Future Past type stuff.
Right. I do always like Days of Future Past type
Me
stuff.
Me too. I just don't want to live it. Right. Ms. Marvel number 15 is another of her up against a sort of computer hacker, doxer type person, which is another interesting story. Power Man and Iron Fist number 13 is a good story. Doctor Strange and Sorcerer Supreme number 5 is the origin of Isaac Newton, who at one point was Sorcerer Supreme, turns out.
Okay.
Black Widow number 11 is the penultimate issue of that book. And features Black Widow in an Antarctic SHIELD base dealing with younger versions of herself, basically fighting her.
Whoa.
So lots of solid action. Deadman, Dark Mansion of Forbidden Love number 3 wraps that book. Is really good finale. Only Wolverine number 17 guest stars Gambit. Yep. And is also a part of the Enemy of State storyline they've been doing. And then there is a new Empowered miniseries. First time they've done this as a mini and not just a graphic novel.
Oh, yeah.
It's got
a little color special style.
Yep, but it's a 3-issue series. It's full color art and is a new artist named Carla Diaz, which is pretty cool. And then there's a new issue of Dr. Aphra. Also, Darth Vader fans should know that Darth Vader Volume 2 hardcover comes out this week. Yep. Oh, and toy fans should know there is a badass Batman Beyond 3-pack that has Batman Beyond, Old Man Bruce Wayne, and Ace the Bat Hound.
Bruce Wayne looks like he's about to beat you down with
his cane. It's so good, you guys.
And you know what? Statuary fans should know that there's a new statue of the female Thor.
Yeah, the Marvel Bishojo statue.
And it looked fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Really, very nice.
Dave, what else is on your stack?
Let's see. Not a lot of other stuff. I wanted to mention, I haven't read it yet, but this latest issue of the Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. Has amazing artwork from, I don't even know who this is, Sandoval, is that it? Rafa Sandoval? Ivan Rice would be my comparison.
Okay.
There is a lot of interesting bit of detail. But mostly this kind of came up as an interesting conversation because the old Silver Age character, Space Cabby, is used in this. And if you flip to the very first panel, first page, that is a cool-looking update to his space cab.
Yep.
Randy wants his space cab to look like Fifth Element space cab,
yep.
I think.
Yep. Or,
but just give this one a shot. It's cool-looking, and it seemed like a fun new take on him.
Also looks like it, on the cover it has St. Walker.
Yep.
Which I haven't seen.
I was like seeing the blue lanterns in there, too, yeah. I wanted to mention that there's a new printing out of Love is Love.
Yep, we got a big restock.
Yeah, that was the... this is the tribute book that is a charitable fun thing for the shooting victims of the in the Orlando, Florida nightclub shootout, right? Or shooting, and immediately sold out and became very hard to find. Yep. So if you have been looking for that,
this is curated by Martin Draco, is that
yep,
correct?
Yep, and there's a who's who of talent involved
in
it.
Yeah, it's an amazing amount of talent.
And for every copy you buy, Randy will post an angry rant on Facebook against Donald Trump.
Yay!
Actually, it doesn't matter whether you buy it or not.
Yeah, that's happening. and lastly, there's one more graphic novel here. They put out a big old Cloak & Dagger collection. Cloak & Dagger, who will soon have their own TV show.
Yep.
This is a collection of early material by their original creator, Bill Mantlo, and probably several other people. It's got all the crossovers, but it has their introduction issue.
Yep.
The original miniseries that had them, all the stuff from the early 80s that introduced this very unusual team. And there was stuff in here that I'd forgotten as I was flipping through it, like Dagger, when she kills this, takes out a drug dealer early on, she does kill him.
Yep.
It's not like she just, usually her light daggers would like...
There's almost some dark themes.
Yeah,
well, and they're like, they're original Batman style, like it's a fitting end for his kind.
Yeah,
well,
isn't there miniseries? Isn't that the aspirin one? Or
no, that's later on.
Is that later on?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I don't know where that falls in here.
This has like the Spectacular Spider-Man issues. It's got New Mutants.
Right,
it's
New Mutants crossovers. There's some good solid workmanlike art in this, but then suddenly Bill Sienkiewicz, two issues of his New Mutants run, or two or three are in here,
yep.
where they crossed over. And suddenly the art goes from like, oh, that's pretty good, that's solid, to, oh, man, it's Bill Sienkiewicz, this is amazing. I've always liked these weird kids. Not every single story in here is great, but there is kind of, there's a fascinating weirdness to them. Kind of darker, but also very human stories. So if you're curious to know what the deal is with Cloak & Dagger, this is probably as good a collection as you are going to get.
Yep. Nick?
Just a few to add. I've got an eighth issue of The Titans, which starts up a new series, story arc called Made in Manhattan.
Is it a crossover with that movie?
No, that would be weird with them crossing over with Jennifer Lopez, but, you know. I think it was Michael Vartan, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's correct.
The fourth issue of Unworthy Thor, which is notable if you're a Thor fan. I will say that's all I'll say.
Okay.
New
Why?
I'm throwing things at Dave now. Issue 973 of Action Comics, which starts up the mild-mannered story arc, which says it will reveal the secret identity of Clark Kent.
Secret identity. Are you ready for mildness? Are you ready for manneredness?
And then there's a new story arc starting up in All-Star Batman, which is a Poison Ivy story with art by Tula Lote.
Well, go ahead, Nick.
She worked with Warren Ellis on
Supreme something.
Blue Rose. I was also going to mention, it's interesting, the first storyline, the one with Two-Face, was like a five-issue arc. Then he did the Mr. Freeze one, which I thought, I wasn't sure if that was over, but it was indeed a one-shot. I don't know if this is a one-shot.
No.
But it is interesting that he's not going to do, like, it's not necessarily going to be a set five-issue arc. So far he's done a five-issue arc, one-off, maybe, don't know.
It's more like Legend of the Dark Knight.
Yeah, I think it's basically that kind of general freedom, and, you know, the collections will just grab them up as needed.
And then there's one more collection I want to mention, and that is The Invisibles, Volume 1, which, if you want a group of individuals rallying against evil and maybe fighting against
totalitarian
government, you might want to check this book out.
I have no interest in that kind of thing.
I mean, Grant Morrison might have interesting ideas and things he wants to say about that.
Grant, you know, and this is definitely like Grant Morrison's psychedelic.
I mean, it's completely Grant Morrison.
rebellion against. I imagine that it's like in this. It's not just like there might not just be bad totalitarian people. There are probably bad totalitarian people whose very existence represents like entropy or control or something like that.
Yeah, but they're definitely.
You have to find out the patterns of their existence to undermine them.
I mean, because this was coming out what, in the '90s.
Yes,
it's interesting how themes come around.
Yeah. Nick, you're not going to mention the other graphic novel that your nostalgia pick?
Yes, there is a crossover that I remember reading that has Wolverine, Ghost Rider, and Punisher, and I'm blanking on
Heart of Darkness.
Heart of Darkness.
Basically.
Introduced with Blackheart, Mephisto's son,
yep.
John Romita Jr. art. This
and
was
Ron
a
Garney art.
This and Ron Garney art. This was a introduced. I remember this because I was working at a comic shop when it came out.
It's as badass as it gets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you like yourself some Punisher, Ghost Rider, and or Wolverine, you might check that out.
I think it's interesting just for the interaction of the three main characters.
Did you say Romita Jr. does some art?
Yeah.
All the art?
He does like the first three issues, and Ron Garney does the following two.
Okay. Not bad.
No, it was good stuff from Garney.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about some board games and some TV and food. Before we get into the TV and board game stuff, Nick, you finally, on advice of me and Dave, begging you without spoilers, got to see Split.
Yes, I did.
And without spoiling it for anyone, did you like it?
Yeah, I very much enjoyed it. It was kind of a harrowing experience.
Yes.
It's rough.
Did it remind you?
You guys were talking, you compared it to Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah, yeah.
Or 10 Cloverfield Lane, I should
But it's
say.
Got a little bit more
it's
edge.
A bit more, it has a bit more edge to it.
Yeah, it's true.
Like McAvoy, not to besmirch John Goodman at all.
Yeah.
But McAvoy is a little bit more sinister and imposing.
Well, you know, part of the whole point of Cloverfield Lane was that to walk that tightrope of is like, is he just a guy who's kind of off, or is he off and really dangerous?
Yeah.
I mean, from the get-go, you know McAvoy's dangerous.
Yeah.
Kind of out of his mind.
Yeah.
Right.
But it went through some surprises that I was not expecting at all.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? The trailer for this, I think we talked about this. Did we mention it last week, what the trailer showed?
No.
Basically, the trailer was just...
It's the first, like 10 minutes.
It's well, actually, it did cut out some of the scene at, like, whatever, the mall or whatever they were at.
Yeah,
but it essentially showed these girls who are, like, leaving a party. They get in their car. There's, like, a odd man out friend with them that their dad's going to ride home.
Yep.
He's putting stuff in the trunk. And you see just the shadow, like, of somebody approaching him. And he kind of looks up, like, he kind of like, what? But the trunk is up. And then it cuts back to the girls in the car. And they're talking. The trunk closes. Suddenly, the door opens, and the guy who gets in the car is not their dad.
Nope.
And
he gasses them into unconsciousness.
This like sort of mace
thing,
or like, but like not that knocks him out, and it's very unnerving. So that was the trailer.
Yeah.
And like some of his other trailers, whether it was The Sixth Sense, which showed the scene with the car accident, or Unbreakable, which had the train derailment, like the doctor talking to him afterwards. And it was just this slow burn scene.
Yeah.
I really like when he does those trailers that give you just a little hint of what's going to come.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember, in that scene with the doctor in Unbreakable, wasn't it Matt Shalman played the doctor?
No.
Are you sure?
I don't think so. Maybe you're right.
Because he
shows up in all the movies.
He shows up in all the movies. Very.
No, it was not a doctor. He was not the doctor.
No, I don't think he was a doctor. Sure? I think he was something else in that movie.
Yeah. Because I remember, I mean, part of the reason I'm sure of it I think it's just a slightly older white doctor guy.
Yeah, I think so, too.
But also because I think even then, even though that was only his, sort of third big movie? It's like, was it Signs?
No, it was his second big movie. Unbreakable was number two.
I don't think they would have done him as in the trailer.
Yeah.
He does cameos, bigger than Hitchcock, but not the kind of the point that they would put it in a trailer.
So anyway, to reinforce, go see Split.
Yeah.
And don't let anyone spoil it for
you. Right,
very
can't
much worth it.
Really talk about it too much other than to say it's a harrowing suspense story.
I will say this, though. A lot of accolades are going to McAvoy, but I have to hand it to the young female Who I'm blanking on who
she's not the, she's not from Kimmy Schmidt, is she? Because she looks like Zan from Kimmy Schmidt.
I don't think so.
I keep meaning to look that up and I keep forgetting.
She is. Yeah. She was fantastic.
Yeah.
Her
particular.
But there were also scenes with her younger self that were just very.
She did not portray herself in those.
No, but that'd be weird. Another CG young Randy. Actor, but both of them handled the character.
I actually thought everybody was good, even the slightly smaller role. You know, the other people who were kidnapped, basically. And then there's also the doctor. There's a doctor character who's
she was great.
Not seen in any of the trailers, and I won't tell you what her role is, other than I thought she did a great job.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm looking up this Anya Taylor-Joy is the name of the lead actress just to see what else she's been in, if anything. She was in Atlantis.
Okay. All right.
The TV show.
A relative unknown, then.
Yep.
Broadly speaking, what Randy said, see it before it gets spoiled. It is not built on its twists and turns, but... They do add something neat to it.
The less you know going in, the happier you'll be.
And I would remove the connotations that Shyamalan has gotten in movies because, you know, he's basically been said to make just crap nowadays. And this is
It's interesting. Is like it was like retroactive. It was like people disliked Lady in the Water and some of the like Avatar and stuff so much that like almost they retroactively didn't like his earlier stuff.
Yeah.
Almost like it had tarnished him. And I was like, no, that early stuff is awesome. It's still great fun to watch.
Yep. It definitely decreases. Like, I think a lot of people, Sixth Sense was their favorite, and he never got better than that.
Right.
I actually like Unbreakable better than Sixth Sense, but in general, I would say those two are his best, and it was decreasing returns from there on.
Right. But I like his first four movies really well.
Yeah.
So I would also include Signs and Village in there with some caveats. But overall, like, I actually find them hugely watchable still when I watch, even knowing what the ending stuff in them. But I think we all sort of felt return to form.
Yeah.
That if you liked Signs and some of those early ones, you're going to want to give this one a shot.
Everybody makes a crap movie every once in a while.
That's right. Or even sometimes three in a row.
Some people make three or four in a row and then they return to form. This never happens. That's why this is unusual. Usually once you start making bad movies, although Ridley Scott made The Martian, so it is possible to come back from a string of crap movies.
He had, I felt that he kind of started getting back on track with his script writing on Devil. And then he had a pretty good movie in The Visit. Was that what it was called?
Yeah.
Which was a scary movie from last year with the creepy grandparents.
Anyway, maybe someone...
I think, the best.
In some kind of twist, maybe someone killed the evil Shyamalan or the ego monster that was driving him.
Right.
And he's gotten back to being a good filmmaker.
His career is a parabola.
Yes. I have to say, I did watch The Happening.
Why would you do that?
He wanted to take himself down from the high.
I wanted to see, because I'd never experienced
it. I did feel that when it like first was hitting cable and stuff like that, I was like, I've already heard it's terrible, but I gotta see. Now, I wouldn't see it probably like Nick did right after I had seen a really good one and risk bringing myself down. Nick, what was your experience?
It was fun in the sense of it being a very bad movie, but...
There were
lines that Mark Wahlberg utters that I'm like, that would be an amazing gif. Or that would be just taken out of context. That's like his delivery
kind of stupefying.
Yeah, I'm like,
well, what? I also thought like he and the kind of Zooey Deschanel, who has her own weird delivery anyway, I can see in a way why he picked them, but I felt that they were at cross purposes with what he does.
I feel like there's a nugget in there of a good story.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the basics were cool, and the trailers were creepy.
And there are some creepy moments. And it's. I love how the movie basically just starts, and shit is already hitting the fan.
Right.
And I think that was an interesting juxtaposition of his usual, which is very slow build-ups in some regards.
He always has an interesting approach, and he gets unusual performances out of his actors. You know, like, if you think about, say, Unbreakable... Bruce Willis is a very subdued Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And he has a few big kind of outburst moments, most notably like when his kid draws his gun on him and stuff like that.
Yep.
He draws a gun on him. And he's rarely kind of does things that are typical. He rarely stages a scene in a conventional way. And so I always like that about him. Like you said, there's moments moments
I'm
in the
happening.
I'm just
saying, I might have to go watch Lady in the Water. I've
oh, no, Nick,
that.
Don't
I've
do
never
it.
Watched it.
Give it some time.
I will not be watching either of those movies. So you guys enjoy.
I like bad movies sometimes.
I know. All right, so there's been a few new TV shows. I know, Nick, you and I both watched 24 Legacy, number,
yes.
the first episode back. What did you think?
I was a little saddened that they didn't depart from the normal 24-isms. But,
oh, man, this is, for people who are worried that, like, oh, what if it's going to be really different? No, no, it is 24.
It's cookie cutter.
Yeah.
And kind of parody
in a little
bit
you,
of a way.
I asked Nick, I'm like, do they have a mole? And there's not a mole yet.
There is so much, there is so clearly a mole.
I mean, there's a mole, don't get me wrong. But
no, there's a mole. We know there's a mole.
Like
they,
an actual mole?
Yeah, an actual mole. They say in the first episode
yeah.
that someone at the CIA, FBI, or CTU is
you
know, leaking info to the terrorists.
And you know it's CTU because it basically leaks like a Sith.
Yeah. No, I mean, we know there's a mole. Yes.
Okay, Nick, you lied to me.
Yes, there's a mole, 100%.
You're just saying that they didn't, like...
They didn't outright, like, this is the mole.
They didn't
right.
reveal, but they did reveal that there is one.
Right, okay. Well, that's
there's
close
al-
enough.
There's also Jimmy Smits is running for president, and
yeah.
his wife is the former head of CTU.
Yep.
Oh, wow, that's like a greatest
like,
hits of...
Oh,
that's
yeah.
like Miranda Otto, or playing the...
I don't know who she is, but she's great.
She's great. I mean, they've got some really good people. Jimmy Smits is fantastic.
Jimmy Smits.
Corey Hawkins is
Corey
amazing.
Corey Hawkins is good.
Who's that?
He's the lead.
He's
okay.
the lead, but he's from Straight Outta Compton. He
okay.
played...
right, Ice Cube. He played Ice Cube, right?
Did he play Ice
no.
Cube?
No.
Oh, I thought
he
y'all
played...
Oh, my God.
Oh, well, what else is... The guy
he's
who
the
played
lead.
Ice Cube is...
He's the lead. It's not Ice Cube. Yeah,
oh God,
see?
This is bad.
We're all revealing that we don't know enough about NWA.
No, my knowledge of NWA.
I'm like, it's
well.
Not Eazy-E. It's not Ice Cube. It's
Dr.
I can't.
Dre.
It's Dr. Dre. Oh my God! It's Dr. Dre.
Sir Dre.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway.
Oh my God, Randy. We forgot about.
We
Dre.
Forgot about Dre.
But I mean, there are straight up like insane moments like you expect from 24.
Yep.
There's the action you expect. There's all the subplots like. Corey Hawkins' brother is like a mobster.
No, he's a drug dealer.
A drug
and,
dealer.
And he. There's the whole thing. The thing is, there's some interesting stuff in here. His wife is like a nurse, but she is forced to like go action. She like gets their gun in the house and kills a terrorist. Like
my wife was very appreciative of that. She's like, at least she wasn't made out to be.
I liked
a, kind of just dumb.
I liked that too, but then they put her in the damsel in distress role immediately.
Yeah,
they've always done. They've always back and forth done that. By the way, one of my all time favorite 24 moments. I just
yep.
got to call it out, even though this is a Kim moment.
Yep.
And Kim was generally kind of a weak and ineffectual character, but it's the one where she had like the creepy, she was like babysitting for abusive, crazy dad.
Yes.
And he like tried to attack her and she ended up getting her gun and she's talking to her dad on the phone and she shoots him. And he's like, all right, Kim. I just like, good job.
Put another
like,
bullet in him.
I want you to calm down, take a breath. And he's like, shoot him again. I was
yep.
like, that is so amazing. Nobody ever does it in movies
yep.
and stuff.
I certainly expect Kiefer Sutherland to show up at some point.
By the way, speaking of moles, the Miranda Otto's character, if that is in fact her, is she's running an op with the – they can't trust CTU.
Uh-huh.
So the new director of CTU, played by Teddy Sears, who was
Jay
Garrick and Zoom, he's like going to come out and discover that they're running this op.
Yep.
And he's going to shut him down even though he needs this information to find his buddy. And so – he's on there and he's like, what are you doing? And he gets on the computer. He's like, I'm shutting you down. And she looks over at her purse. There's a taser in it.
Uh-huh.
And if you know 24, you know what happens next. I laughed out loud.
Oh, I did too. There's also some fun callbacks to the original series.
Because yeah.
one of the computer analysts there is actually like Edgar's...
That's right. It's Edgar's like niece
or
something. Yeah.
Man, I forgot about Edgar.
You forgot about Dre and Edgar?
So,
there's also there's a bit of superhero-y stuff where he shoots a cable and a rolly pipe is used to take out terrorists.
Yeah, it's like a rolling pin.
Yes, it is.
Right. What would be a quick time event in a video game?
This is 24 at its
okay.
goofiest, and you like it or you don't.
Okay.
The action's good. The melodrama is good.
Pretty good.
It's exactly what I want it to be. My only issue is. It definitely does play up sort of the right-wing fantasy that 24 always has, and that every Muslim is dangerous. There's a Chechenian refugee student who is a Lolita who has tricked a teacher into being part of her terrorist plot.
That was the subplot. I was like, really?
there's definitely a good thing you had a gun to defend your home against terrorists bit.
Right.
Even though she has a gun safe, there's definitely a, look, if she hadn't had a gun, those terrorists would have killed them. There's a little bit of that right-wing fantasy. And given that we're in a world that where that kind of thing gets picked up on, I'm a little nervous that in 3 weeks there'll be a press conference where someone points to this episode and says, see, this is why we need a Muslim ban.
Right.
So it makes me uncomfortable as a bleeding heart liberal to watch this show.
Yeah.
But I'm still probably going to watch it.
Yeah. Y'all have told me enough crazy stuff that I would kind of like to check it out, too. Well, I was remembering with Nick earlier, one of my favorite scenes from, I believe, the last season of the previous season, 24, Jack has to break into that building with all the protesters around him. And there's just, like, no getting in. He pulls his gun. Yep. He shoots one of the protesters in the leg.
Yeah.
And then shouts out and causes a panic. And he's like, somebody's got a gun!
Yep.
And, like, there's a riot.
Yep.
So he can sneak into a building.
I have tons of fun memories of 24. So yeah.
I think ridiculous is part of it.
You've got to enjoy it on that ridiculous level. If you're watching it for realism, I mean...
You're probably slightly scared.
Yeah, you're watching it really wrong.
Yeah, you're watching it wrong. But if it's part comedy for you, it's gold.
Yes. Kaylee, who's never, my wife, has never seen an episode of 24, and she watched it, and she was like, well, this is wildly stupid, but I am enjoying it, because it's...
Well, you started with Legacy?
She didn't want to go back and watch it. She just wanted to jump in, and I was like, she was like, can I jump...
this should be like a starting point.
Well, she said, can I jump in? And I'm like, yeah, this is a new day. This is new characters.
You can. You definitely can, but there are some nice nods for the long term.
Did they keep the classic countdowns thing?
Oh, yes.
Everything, the timer and stuff work as normal?
Yep.
All right. Right, got to see if anybody notable dies this season and gets the sacred silent countdown.
I was a little, I think on your post or something that you did on Facebook, was it Grant who posted, was like, yeah, it was a little weird that they were all eating, like, breakfast foods and everyone was getting ready
at noon. It was a little weird.
I was like, God, I didn't even think about that, but now that you pointed it out, it's a little strange.
That's kind of a weird detail for them to miss. I mean, I'm the kind of person who would be eating breakfast at noon.
Yeah, me too, and that's why I didn't notice anything.
Well, we're weirdos.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think Grant, it sort of bothered him, I think, because he was like this seems like a last-minute change, like they changed some stuff up, and it is a little weird. But I didn't notice it because I don't get breakfast until noon. So.
But I was entertained by the episode.
Yeah, it's fun. Nick, you also watched the new Fox show, APB?
Yeah, I did watch the first episode of that. It's okay. And that's about as far as I'll go. The concept behind it is Justin Kirk
as a tech billionaire who's making a...
basically buys a district, a police district.
That's not at all worrisome.
And, I mean, he does it for altruistic motives.
Sure.
Comedy or drama?
Drama mixed with action, with a little bit of light comedy.
Hour-long show?
Bones-type stuff.
Got it.
It's procedural. And it's one of those things where it's like tech... meshes with police.
They have, like, drones and identification software and all that kind of stuff.
New cars, new taser weapons.
So what's the deal? This like, you say it's basically like a tech billionaire or something like that?
Yeah.
He's got all these resources.
Imagine, they take basically Tony Stark. I mean, it is very influential on this. And...
I'd rather have Tony Stark stuff than ultra-militarized.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and something happens to this guy that makes him sort of want to be by the police because it's being run into the ground, essentially. He realizes that the cops don't have the funding that they need to actually do their jobs and things like that. So he sort of steps in and kind of muscles the people behind the curtain in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I actually really liked the lead. He was very charismatic and kind of fun.
Justin Kirk?
Yeah.
He's great.
I don't know where he's from.
Weeds.
Oh, is he from...
Yeah, he's also been on Modern... He was Andy.
Okay.
He was also on Modern Family. He's been a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I really liked him. I have a hard time seeing where they're going to ultimately go with this. I mean, they do leave a broader question at the very end of the episode, so you can sort of see what they're going to do. But I don't know how long Fox is going to run with it.
We'll see. The other show that I watched, and you've watched a little bit of, is Santa Clarita Diet.
Yep, Netflix, one of their 100 shows that they drop every day.
It's, I think, a 10-episode. It's basically Drew Barrymore and Timothy Oliphant play a realtors, or as Oliphant pronounced it, realtors, which is weird, in Santa Clarita, California. And something happens, and Drew Barrymore's character seemingly dies, throws up her entire body weight, and becomes a zombie.
Yep.
And then from there, and they've got a daughter. And from there, they're trying to find a cure, but also trying to keep her in meat, which means they've got to murder people. And
there's a progression.
Yeah,
to it.
There's a progression.
Not straight to the.
It gets there pretty quickly.
It gets there pretty quickly.
It is a. It reminds me of what iZombie does, although it's less and procedural it's, and it's different.
It's different.
It's a black comedy.
It very much is.
And it definitely, the first couple episodes are good but not great, but as it goes on, it gets better and better.
I think it falls on the shoulders of both Barrymore and Oliphant.
Yeah.
And they do a tremendous amount.
Can she still speak after being zombie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's still herself.
Basically, right. She's an amplified version of herself. So all of her sort of emotions and
she's more
desires,
id-driven.
Yes.
Interesting. This is such a weird-sounding conglomeration of stuff that I will have to take a peek.
It's really fun. I like it.
I've always had a kind of a crush on Drew Barrymore. Is the zombie state going to kind of put me off?
No. Yeah. She's still super cute. And she's not, they're not doing like zombie, like she's not rotting.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, she's
it's
just
not,
like,
usually zombies are.
Yeah. It's not typical zombies.
No, it's not typical zombies.
Yeah, I figured it was, like you said, iZombie-ish. Or
I was surprised at how good Timothy Oliphant is at the comedic timing stuff.
He's done comedy before, but yeah, it's kind of
very
fun to see him do this.
I mean, most of the time we saw him in Justified for 5 seasons.
Yeah, or Deadwood.
Or Deadwood. He's not really the cracking jokes kind of guy.
He's fun. At first I found him a little too over the top, but then I finally figured the speed he was working at, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely worth a watch. All right, I played a whole bunch of board games. Before we do that, we're going to talk about pre-prepared meal services. It's our food segment that we do regularly here on the show.
Yeah, it's a regular segment.
That's right.
No, we've all we all cook to some degree or another, but we've all decided to try various.
I don't.
Dave doesn't.
Dave actually no.
That's all. That is, which is very part of the reason I did this. So I don't know if people know about these pre-prepared meal services that
if you
listen to podcasts and stuff, they advertise all the time in it.
By the way, we're not getting paid for this, and we probably should be.
Yeah.
But
although I have some reservations.
Okay. You guys are doing Blue Apron.
We both did Blue Apron.
And I'm doing HelloFresh.
But they're both the same kind of deal.
They're both the same kind of deals.
Basically, you pay a weekly fee that's like 50, 60 bucks.
It's like 10 bucks a meal per person.
Right. They send you in like in a box the all the ingredients for like three meals and usually
perfectly portioned out.
Right, perfectly portioned out, and you can either get like for two meals or for like family meals. Like,
yep.
And they have like freezer packs and stuff in there, little ice packs to keep the cold stuff cold, so the meat, fish, chicken, all that kind of stuff is not going to be rotting out on your porch.
Yeah, and it has literally everything you need except for olive oil, salt and pepper, and like knives and that kind of stuff.
Right.
Like all the spices are in there.
Imagine if they shipped
the meat.
You know what I realized I needed last night though was a I don't know if you would call it a zester or no, it's not a zester, but it's like an orange peeler or a lemon peeler.
Oh, to make
Where you can get it without getting the pith.
Yeah.
And so you can zest it.
Yeah.
But anyway, these are the idea is to give you all the stuff you need to make a meal, so you can just dive right in without doing the shopping for it. You can maybe try some different meals.
It's got step by step instructions.
It's got the instructions.
They also have like YouTube videos for like if you want to learn how to dice an onion, you can go to YouTube.
I have looked at these videos because many of these things I don't know, and they're handy.
Would you say they have converted you, a non chef, into a Cordon Bleu level chef?
I would say so. Yeah. I have made 3 of their meals now. I've enjoyed every one, although I did somehow lose the spaghetti noodles, the pasta from the previous one. And I don't know if that's my fault or they didn't include it. I feel like it's probably my fault because the packages are so meticulously done. But I just have no idea where it went. So what was going to be
a drawer, you're gonna find some pasta.
I'm like, there's the goddamn pasta. So what was going to be a pasta meal that had shrimp and broccoli and this really cool kind of buttery sauce became just shrimp and broccoli, basically.
So you did sort of the Atkins thing.
That's right.
By accident.
That's right. But by and large, I've been enjoying this. Nick, what's your general experience with your slightly different but similar
one? I've liked all the ones we've tried. We've tried 3 of them so far.
Oh, yeah. What are the meals?
There was a pasta. There have been one pasta that had – I think a lot of these places really like kale. Because I feel like that's become an ingredient.
Yeah, kale and Brussels sprouts are sort of hipster foods at this point.
So I had like a pasta that had sausage and kale, which was tasty.
Yeah.
Then there was...
You know, my sister-in-law posted on my Facebook page when I was posting about this.
She was hating on kale.
She hated kale. And I don't know if this was just based on reputation or she had a bad kale experience, but I did always have...
She got roughed up by kale in an alley.
I've generally known kale to be somewhat hated on. But my experience was that when cooked in some olive oil and salted and peppered and
garlic
and just one or two other little things, It became, I like spinach and stuff like that, and it reminded me a lot of spinach. And it was a nice sort of little side dish.
Yep.
It was not, these are all, by the way, portioned so that you get like a healthy protein something in there. It's not like you're going to be, I mean, you can get, I guess, vegetarian meals. But that's
why
not,
would you?
But that's not their main thing. So so what else have you had, Nick?
And then I had chili, which really doesn't work for me because I don't like beans.
You don't like beans. Your wife doesn't like tomatoes.
So that one was a little iffy. Then we had like a Chinese noodle dish that was actually really tasty.
That looked pretty good.
I should say that you can, on most of these, although you don't have a ton of options, in a given week, you can go in and tweak the one. You can say, there's alternates to choose.
Yeah, so you don't have to take something you don't like.
Right. But I have been using it to try some other stuff. The most experimental one, like I made some tacos that had these really awesome sweet potatoes on the side that had like a had been tossed in like serrano peppers and what do you call the stuff you glaze things with or whatever
maple syrup
a marinade that had like sugar, lemon juice, and I think these peppers in it. And then you heat it on these wedges of sweet potatoes, and then you put cheese on it and heat it for just a little bit longer so you get a nice cheese coating on top. Mm-hmm. That was like mozzarella. Delicious. Super good. And I'm not even a guy who normally likes sweet potatoes.
No, that recipe I'm going to steal from you.
Yep. But the one that I tried that was a little more experimental was the, like a West African sort of peanut sauce chicken.
That looked good, too.
That had kale and rice on the side and was delicious. Like, I feel like these are actually relatively low calorie.
Yeah.
At least some of the ones I've had have been. Like I feel like this was like 750 or 700 or something like that, which is pretty solid. But they're very filling.
Yep.
You can they're like sometimes come with spice packets, and you can either make it as spicier as you want or don't want. You don't have to include that kind of stuff like when there's peppercorn or serrano peppers or whatever.
Yeah. If you're, and I got it. I liked it.
Yeah. So you had a slightly different experience.
There was an Italian meatloaf with a like a pasta side, and then what else did I make? Oh, there was a souvlaki like heroes and. One of my favorite things that I made was like a honey mustard chicken with, roasted vegetables. That was pretty good. And then there's one other thing I made. We did like four meals. I liked it. I think it's really good. It gives you some interesting ideas because the other thing, they all come with the recipes.
Right.
So you can recreate it later with the recipes from around town.
Tweak them as you will. Like, oh, I like this, but, you know, could have done without this side or might have liked it a little bit less without this ingredient.
But over the last 2 years, one of my New Year's resolutions is always to add like 12 new recipes to try out and to try and add. And I usually wind up with like five or six in my repertoire. So I have a menu of like 40 things I can cook now.
Right.
This is not as neat as necessary to me. Right. Like,
well, Nick, I know you have some cooking skill too.
Yeah, and this is more of just sort of branching
expedience.
Out. Trying.
Well, it's part of it's expedience. You don't have to shop.
Right. That's also a big thing.
Like, I'm really enjoying kind of trying. Not so much. These don't always feel super international to me.
Yeah.
But some of them are, and also if nothing else, like even if it's a burger, they're going to be tweaking it and like. They're not quite gourmeting it, but they're gourmeting it up a little bit so that everything has a little bit of nuance to it.
It's also the time, because most of the ones I've done have been cooked in under 30 minutes.
Right. For like a hillbilly like me, who's like, I don't have ever like a good, well-stocked kitchen and stuff like that, but I've got most of the basics. It's probably closer to an hour just to get it all done, because I'm also like, oh, you know, I'm not skilled at mincing things, and you know I'm being overly cautious on stuff.
Right.
Sure.
That's how you keep your thumbs.
That's right. I think they usually most of them have like a 10 to 15 minute prep time.
Yeah.
And then like you know 20 to 30 minute cooking time.
Yeah.
So probably like the average I would bet would be 30 to 40 minutes for most people.
I would say that if you're someone who doesn't cook a lot, or who just doesn't like shopping. Or doesn't like searching for recipes.
Right.
This is pretty good.
Yeah, they're completely ready to go. Even if you have if somebody gave you a bunch of good recipes, you'd still have to go wrangle the ingredients. Yep. And here you don't have to worry about that.
And it's all portions. There's no waste. It's a good deal. And if it's I definitely understand why people go for it.
Yeah, I think if it sounds interesting to people, although it is pricey, I did also realize that like. I eat out a whole lot,
mm-hmm.
more than I'd like to, and a lot of that stuff is is high-calorie stuff. And these I'm probably actually spending a little bit less on meals as a result of that, because if you go over $10, then on an eating out meal, and sure, there's the occasional cheap McDonald's for $6 or $8, but a lot of them are going to be like, oh, I just spent $20 at Kirby Lane or something like that.
Yeah,
then it's actually better and better for me.
It's cheaper than eating out, or it's better food than you get from fast food.
Right.
It's not much more expensive than a fast food meal these days. So Nick,
the one Randy and I did was Blue Apron. What was yours called?
It's called HelloFresh.
Okay.
And I have to say, based on sort of the recipes in HelloFresh 2 are a little bit easier. In some regards, I feel like Blue Apron is like a little bit more advanced.
Well, they started as a gourmet food and they sort of pivoted to become what they've become.
I might be interested actually to try the ones that you do at some point because this was like a bit of a jump forward for me.
Yeah.
I feel like we have a code we can give you and you can get like a week's worth of food for free. So
right. Oh, cool. Yeah, I've been giving out to friends. I had 3 codes for Blue Apron. Sorry, folks, they're all claimed at this point. But
this is definitely kind of
get a friend to do it and
becoming a big thing.
Yeah,
I mean, it's hitting more and more people.
Yeah. All right. So I want to talk about a whole bunch of games I played this weekend. I went to a friend's board game night, which I do once a month. I have a board game night of some kind, and I played a whole bunch of them into play. Machikoro, Bright Lights, Big City, which we've talked about Machikoro before. It is a Japanese city-building game. Uses dice and cards. Bright Lights, Big City is a new expansion, but it's basically a new standalone, and it's sort of a new core set. And what it does is it randomizes the
loadout of cards.
Yeah, it randomizes the buildings that are available, but in such a way as it's not quite as random as the previous one, where sometimes the game would be unbalanced or it'd be all expensive buildings nobody could afford and that kind of thing. It tweaks the gameplay and basically makes what was already one of my favorite games an even better game.
Right, cool. And although we've talked about it before, Machikoro is one of the most approachable games. Great family game, I think. Plays quick, 20-30 minutes?
Yep. Yeah. I honestly think everyone should have Machikoro, Catan, and Carcassonne in their house.
Right, yeah. These are great staples. Maybe take it to ride.
And we sell all those games.
Yes.
We do.
So it might be that that's why.
Come on down.
But I have all of them in my house, so...
Right. These are legit games.
Yeah. I also played a little mini game called Hey, That's My Fish. A game
which we've carried forever and love the title.
Yes. It is a game where you have penguins. You're on a little tile board. You're trying to grab the tiles that have the most fish without winding up isolated on an island, at which point your penguin floats away, and we decided was eaten by narwhals. And then at the end, you kind of fish whoever's the most fish wins. Really fun, quick play game. Plays like 10 minutes. And
pretty
good
cool
for
mechanics.
Good for younger players.
Yep.
I played a game called Starfall, which is from IDW, the same guys who do Machikoro. Not the same designers, but the same publishers.
I picked this up for my brother as a Christmas gift, or I got it for somebody else to give to him, but we haven't played it yet.
Is this the Constellation one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of astronomy themed.
Yeah, basically,
but like in an abstract way.
You are renegade astronomers, renegade. You're
Rogue NASA?
You're all competing astronomers to try and find the best constellations and stuff. And these little tiles that have comets and planets and moons and stars, you score at the end based on how many you have, and like moons are only worth points if you have a planet to go around.
A little bit like how Sushi Go portions out.
It's similar. And it's a little board that has numbers from 9 to 0. And on your turn, you can either flip over a tile, revealing a new constellation, or you can move the constellations. And if you move them, it moves down to the next lowest price. Or you can spend your stardust to buy them. But if you buy them when they're super expensive, you're not going to be able to buy as many.
So it's kind of a bidding game.
And if you wait for them to go down in price, someone else might buy them first.
This reminds me a little bit of Raw as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever played that, but that has something of that mechanic to it.
Anyway, really fun. I enjoyed that one quite a bit. And then we also played a party game called Spyfall. This one has basically it's a set of cards. There are 8 cards, and there's, I think, 20 different locations. And location cards are like casino or polar ice station or hotel or whatever.
Spy places.
And 7 of the players or less, if you have less players, you'll just take out the other ones. All the players but one are members of these things. So it has on the card, like, I was the card sharp at the casino or I was the – I forget what other roles I had. But you have these cards. So all of you but one of you knows where you are. Then there's the spy card. The spy doesn't know where you are. And so each turn, basically, you take a turn, you ask a question The dealer starts. He asks a question of someone, and you want to ask questions that are vague enough that they won't tip the spy off to where you are, but specific enough so that you can figure out that person knows where you are as well and isn't the spy. And so you have 8 minutes to do this, and then the person you ask a question of asks a question to somebody else.
I need to see a video of this. It sounds cool, but I need to kind of see it to get my head around it.
And so basically it's a game where you're asking questions like, and it can be anything from, we'd start with like simple questions like, how are you today? And then there'd be things like, when we were at the casino, I was like, is all the noise and lights in here bothering you? Because if they know it's a casino, they can say something. Right. If they don't, then the noise and lights might necessarily tell them where they are.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's cool.
And so when you're the spy, you have to answer things really vaguely and ask questions that are both vague enough that they can't tell you don't know where you are, but specific enough so you can figure out where you are. I was the spy twice. I lost once and won once. And then we had several spies who won by tricking us into thinking someone else was the spy. And it's a really fun party game. There's, like I say, like 20 scenarios. It's a lot of, I played with people who I didn't really know. It was a lot of fun to play. We had a lot of fun. And then there's also Spyfall 2, which just came out last week, which has 20 more scenarios and is up to 12 players. So this is a great party game. It's like the werewolf games, but it's a different mechanic.
Yeah, it definitely sounds different enough to be pretty cool sounding.
So I really dug this. It's one of those that will probably come out at a lot of my board game nights from time to time.
Cool.
I think that covers it for this week. So that's everything for us this week. We'll be back next time with more. And until that time, yo, Joe! Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.